Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the iSports MSU Red Theater Report. I am Tyler Hayward. With me today to talk about Michigan State's, some would say, relatively disappointing victory over Furman on this beautiful overreaction Monday is Mike Sterner of iSports Web. We are going to kind of break down what happened in the game a little bit. We are also taking calls. You can hit us up 619-924-9852. 619-9852. You have any questions, or if you just want to talk to Michigan State football with us. Mike, how are you doing today?
Good. How about you, Tyler?
I'm doing good. Trying to sift my way through, I mean, I guess in the state, an uninteresting weekend, if you will, but trying to sift your way through all of that, trying to figure out, okay, what is important from this game? What happened in this game that is important that will be a precedent for that team throughout the course of the year? And now a lot of people, when you talk about the Furman game, there's a couple of issues that stood out, but there were also some good things that happened. And so let's start breaking this down. Obviously, the biggest replacement that Michigan State had to make was in regard to the most prolific and arguably the best quarterback that Michigan State's ever had, Tyler O'Connor. He took over for Connor Cook during the Ohio State game, obviously, in his first career start. His second career start, about what you saw from TOC.
I thought he was a little bit jittery at times, but I also thought he made some plays. You know, you particularly saw some things where he was being able to be mobile with his feet in a way we really haven't seen from a quarterback too much the last few times at Michigan State with the last few starters. He made some plays throws, and then there was times where he was locked in on receivers and, you know, kind of really, you could tell that it was his first true start, you know, first time he was the number one guy where he wasn't just called in for the Ohio State game to start that game. But I think, you know, he's going to improve as the season goes along. There's a lot of, as you referenced, overreaction going on, you know. He didn't play great. He didn't play great. I don't think it was by any means the most impressive performance, but I thought it was okay for sure. I mean, you know, you put in a 13 of 18 performance and 190 yards and a 77.4 QBR. That's pretty solid numbers. You'd like it to be a little bit more impressive against a team like Furman with that caliber, but again, it is also the first game of the season, shaking off that rust a little bit, and it's really hard to judge his play on one game, as many would like to do already.
Yeah, and I mean, you talked about it. He did kind of hone in on, you know, one receiver every time. I mean, on the Felton Davis touchdown, I remember I was looking at it, and Michigan State's offense was coming towards us from where we were sitting in the stadium. And I saw O'Connor look over at Felton Davis, and I see O'Connor staring at him as he walks up to the line. And I lean over to my wife, and I was like, Felton Davis is going to get a touchdown here. And the next thing you know, it was a little in-out type route, and he got Davis right in the – he dropped it right in the breadbasket, and he didn't take his eyes off him for – half a second walking up to the line, taking the snap, and then obviously making the touchdown pass. I think that there was a I thought he did that a little bit, but I mean, you also got to look at it. The receivers didn't really gain a lot of separation as well. Furman had just 8 sacks all of last season. They brought down O'Connor twice behind the line, got him a third time where he fell forward beyond the line of scrimmage. So that's almost half of their total sacks that they had all of last season, if you want to look at it like that. And it's just they weren't gaining any separation. How much did he miss R.J. Shelton in the second in well, the last three quarters of that game.
I think they definitely did a little bit. To some level, R.J. Shelton also presents just different kinds of things as a receiver. He's going to present, obviously, being the leader, the four-year guy who's played all 4 years. And he's going to be able to stretch the field a little bit better than some of these guys who are getting their first action or first significant action as starters. But, yes, they definitely missed R.J. Shelton. You would have liked to have him out there. I think it'll get better for sure. I mean, when you got to keep an eye on a guy like R.J. Shelton, not only can he stretch the field, but he's also so dynamic. He can run a jet sweep. He can do so many things with the ball, you know. So you got to watch out for that with R.J. Shelton, and your best corner is probably going to be on him for most of the game. So that definitely helped out Furman. But I think, again, it's really just the fact that you're just starting this season. There's a lot of new guys that are in a role that they haven't been in before, and they need to get used to the fact that they are the guy now. And I think that was the case. I saw some positives, though, at the receiver position. I liked what I saw from Monty Medeiros. I was pretty impressed, actually, because I didn't, from what I've been hearing from a lot of people, it sounded like he was the guy going under the rug and you weren't going to see much of him this year. But Monty Medeiros stood out to me a little bit. I'd like to see a little bit better play from maybe Daryl Stewart, not only on special teams, but when he gets in. And then Felton Davis, I think, will get better as the season goes on, too. He's just a big and athletic player. So there's a lot to look forward to. I think you can only take so much out of this game, given the injuries we saw and given the fact that it's just the first game. So I think Notre Dame will be a good chance to evaluate where these guys really are.
Yeah, I think the R.J. Shelton thing also hurt in regards that he's probably the most sure-handed receiver that this group has. You look at last season, a freak of nature, but you could make a case that Shelton was just as sure-handed as him. Obviously, he didn't make the plays that Burbridge did, but I mean, when the ball was thrown his way, he didn't drop it. Even in key situations, the third and seven against Rutgers. When Michigan State was kind of backed up, the way that they had issues stopping Leonte Carew, he doesn't get that. Michigan State probably loses that game. Which, by the way, I still go back to that game, and I just think it's absolutely hilarious how Leonte Carew got to play that one game that entire season. For the most part. But, yeah. Look at some of the situations with the passing game. O'Connor was struggling a little bit because he was put in situations that, let's just say, they're more suited for Connor Cook, if you will. He was put in a lot of third and long situations, and ultimately, I don't know if he has the arm to convert on those plays. The offensive line, Josiah Price, Jamal Isles, they all had their issues blocking. Did maybe the fact that he was put in third and 15, third and 16 throughout the course of the game, even the third and 12, do you think that maybe those situations rattled him a little bit and forced him to play at the level he did, since people were expecting him to put up Connor Cook versus Jacksonville State type numbers?
Yeah, I mean, I think that definitely probably went into play a little bit. I don't even know how much it has to do with his arm as it does. It's just the situational fact that when you're in third and long, that's a tough play to make. You know, it's a completely different type of atmosphere. Yeah, and Connor Cook is, I mean, this is what I always say to people. I'm like, if we went back to Connor Cook's very first snaps, we're crucifying him worse than you were O'Connor, really probably rightfully so, because
I believe Connor Cook's very first play was a pick six off of a screen pass against Central Michigan.
Yeah, you might be right. I can't recall that. I can't recall, to be honest with you. But, yeah, I know for a fact that
definitely in his very first snaps, you know, as a quarterback, there was definitely people questioning. That's why we had people with the whole "we want Terry" and all that stuff going on. And so, I mean, that's what you got to really ultimately say about this. Tyler O'Connor is going to figure some things out. You, obviously, you're not going to – you're probably not going to be in that as many of those long situations as Michigan State was. What was it, 120 yards in penalties or something like that? You know, that definitely came into play. It was really, really bad. So I don't think you're going to see that as often. And you're also probably going to have healthy players out there. And hopefully the offensive line gets better as the season goes on, because that definitely was not really in Tyler O'Connor's favor either. He was facing, as you said, pressure that Furman shouldn't be bringing on him, given you know their sack numbers last season, and that was still happening.
Yeah, and again, I want to go back, and I just want to say that I feel that part of that may have been the receivers not getting open. On the other hand, you talked about the 10 penalties, 120. I think that that's going to end up working itself out. Obviously, there were issues at first when D'Antonio kind of came in, but around 2010, 2011, Michigan State became one of the least penalized teams in the Big Ten. And so I think that that will just correct itself, because you look at the guys who committed the penalties. Josiah Price committed a couple, Jamal Iles a few. Those are the seniors on the team. Those are leaders for this ball club who usually don't force themselves into bad situations like that. And so I think that obviously that plus, well, you get 2 weeks to practice, bow, and you'll see the law of averages kind of kick into effect here. The offensive line, on the other hand, the protection wasn't the best, but like I said, I think the receivers played a part in a couple of those sacks in them not getting open. I think one thing that has gradually gotten worse with every offensive line that Mark D'Antonio's had is their ability to pull guards. When you look at a guy who's like L.J. Scott, Le'Veon Bell type, a very patient guy, a guy who can kind of create his own holes and sift through the rubble, the collisions up front and everything else, he did it when Michigan State was just like, hey, let's snap the ball, let's just go straight ahead and block. When there were guard pulling and traps and misdirections and things of that nature, L.J. Scott was getting hit behind the line of scrimmage. And I think that this group can be very good straightforward, but when you start moving them side to side, I think you're going to have some issues.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. That's actually a good observation. And it's kind of difficult with a guy like L.J. Scott because, like you said, he's the kind of guy that can make his own kind of pass and stuff. I think you ultimately, you know, the line does got to get a little bit better, but I agree with your point and the fact that, you know, guys weren't getting open. And I think really, honestly, I think the fact that this was the first game is, and, you know, that might sound cliche too, but I think that has a lot to do with this performance, you know, and what was underwhelming to really basically everybody. It's the fact that this is really the first time that you're seeing these guys go out there, and Michigan State's replacing a lot of players all across the field, really, but particularly on the offensive line and, you know, in the receiving position. So we talked about these are where some of the flaws were. Well, these guys are really getting their first time where they are the guy, you know, before they would come in situationally or but they wouldn't be full-time guys. Now they're the guys, so you got to step up, and that takes on a whole different level of pressure. That takes on a whole different level of expectation, and those things all factor into how you play. And so given this bye week, given what you're going to be able to watch on film if you're Michigan State, and really also given the fact that you've seen some ways to expose the Notre Dame defense, I think Michigan State will come out in South Bend and play a pretty solid game.
Okay, really quick, because I want to touch on the defense. We're about halfway through the show right now. Really quick, was I the only one who was excessively impressed with the way Michigan State threw screen passes Friday night?
Were you the only one?
Just given the history with Connor Cook could not throw a screen pass to save his life. And I thought it was executed really well when you gave the ball to Corley and you gave it to Medaris and you got him into space.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think it. At the end of the day, a lot of people weren't looking at things. I mean, you probably were one of the few because a lot of people weren't even looking at anything, even if it was a small progression like that, you know, something that you would notice if you really paid attention. A lot of people were really just looking at the negative, so they didn't really notice anything positive in a lot of ways. So, yeah, you probably were one of the few that took particular note of that, because I honestly didn't. Now that you say that, that is a good point, but I didn't take note of that in particular either.
Well, I think that it just opens up some things. Michigan State is always going to be a defense first and a running team on offense, and I think that screen passes are essentially glorified runs. And so it's going to be all about clock management, and I think this is going to help, especially given the fact that you do have, I don't want to say a younger quarterback, but an inexperienced quarterback. Let's turn our attention to the defense. Obviously, everybody kind of has an idea of what is going on there. The defensive line is going to be the defensive line. It will be good. I think that they ultimately got negated by quick passes, which Notre Dame is also going to do very well, which Ohio State is going to do very well, which Indiana is. Okay, you know what? Everyone runs quick passes nowadays out of spread sets, and I think that that kind of hurt the defensive line a little bit in regards to it taking away. But let's talk about the second level, the linebackers. Bola was all right, Fry was all right, but let's talk about the Reschke and Dowell thing. People are kind of excited about how Dowell played an absolutely amazing interception. But I wasn't one of those people, and I'll explain why in a second, but I want to get your thoughts on the way Dowell played.
My thoughts on Dowell. I think obviously one of the first things people are going to think of, definitely the interception. I mean, that interception was a really big interception because at that moment, what was it, MSU up 6 or 7 or 8 or something like that? But anyway, that interception, you know. Yeah, it was 8. I couldn't remember if it was 6, 7, or 8. But anyway, if he doesn't make that interception, shoot, Furman goes on the drive. Maybe they tie the game or something, you know. So that's probably why a lot of people are focused on that. I think he had, 8 tackles or something, which mm-hmm. That's a solid performance for him. But, I mean, a lot of people are going to be focused on the big plays, and big plays matter a lot. That was a big play. You hate to say that an interception against Furman is a big play late in the game, but that was a big play. And so people are definitely focused on that. I think the 8 tackles makes it a little bit more impressive too. But, I don't think he's by any means, you know, at the best he can be based on that performance. But I think it's a solid start for him in his, you know, in his first game where he's really being – featured as a top guy.
Yeah, and I mean, I think Reschke will ultimately take him over. I felt a lot of times you had a guy like Gabe Sherrod or Demetrius Cooper when Furman ran that option, which, again, Notre Dame likes to do. When Furman ran the option, you'd often see Dowell getting sucked in. At the end of the game, I think the last 10 minutes or so, he started to play outside a little bit more, and he started to stay in his lane, pick up the running back, as opposed to sinking in, trying to go after the quarterback on that base pivot in. But I think that he got better as the game went on, but it's such a downgrade from how he played against Air Force, because when Darian Harris went out with that injury, very well against the triple option, which I feel is a little more complicated, and you should get sucked in a little bit more on that. And I just thought against the standard speed options that Furman was running, he didn't really live up to the expectation he set for himself.
I think definitely I want to see how much of it is the first game jitters for sure too. You make good points for sure. I'd like to see how that goes into play. We'll have to see how much, I would think Reschke would ultimately be the guy too, but Dowell definitely will be seeing significant snaps this year, I would say. And,
He'll see his time. That's for sure.
Yeah. He's still got plenty of time left in a Michigan State uniform, unless something unforeseen happens. So, given how far along he is in his career, which is not very far, and given the fact that he did make a big interception, the 8 tackles, those other things thankfully didn't hurt the Spartans to a level where a Furman could have pulled an upset. But you'd like to see definitely improvement as the season goes along, which I think, as you even referenced, he improved as the game went along. So, it's probably going to happen.
Let's turn our attention to the defensive backs. Again, Michigan State had issues with the short passes outside of the hash marks in the center of the field, and I think that they've at what point is it the scheme? Because I thought overall the defensive backs looked good. Obviously, there were a few mistakes, a couple times Hicks or Copeland didn't get their respective heads around. How much of it is the scheme, and when will we start seeing something a little more close to the way Michigan State played in 2013? Because I think that this group has it.
Probably to some level it's got to be the scheme. Definitely Hicks worries a lot of people with the turn in his head and stuff, but I honestly thought Darian Hicks played a pretty solid game against Furman. I heard a lot of people be like, Darian Hicks needs to get benched, and I'm like, by what grounds are you saying that? Because he wasn't up to your standards last year? I mean, this is a new season. I thought he played well against Furman, and I think we're going to see a lot more of. I think the scheme is going to factor into it. I think they could change that up a little bit, but the personnel is there.
Don't fix something if it's not broken. Obviously, is the saying, but it almost looks like against teams that like to spread the field, pass the ball, run a few options, like Furman, and obviously to a much greater extent, Notre Dame and Ohio State. This defense is content with being a bend but don't break type defense.
Yeah, and if you do that, you could end up with 2014 Ohio State all over again, which is not a good situation. So, I understand your point there. I think more than Notre Dame, even I think the Ohio State game would be one that emphasizes that fact more, what
mm-hmm.
JT Barrett can do. I mean, if you take a look at that, their first game, that was flashes back of the 2014 JT Barrett. That's what we were seeing in that game. So I think that definitely, there needs to be some thought put into it when you're playing teams like Notre Dame, Ohio State. But I think the personnel is there. You got, I think Tyson Smith's going to have himself a pretty good year when he starts to get some more action. A lot of people are talking about he could jump Hicks because he's fast and stuff. I think that's going a little bit too far, but I do think that he will definitely get some significant snaps and hopefully make some plays for that defense, and the speed will be a part of that. But yeah, I thought overall they played good, but
there are those things, as you're talking about, when you get these kind of teams that can cause you to get into this situation where it's a bend or don't break. That's scary, and I think more than anything, that's going to come up against a team like Notre Dame, but even a larger extent, Ohio State, which that's probably the biggest game on the Spartan schedule this season, if you want to talk about repeating as Big Ten champion. So that's, you know, that should be considered, but we'll see. We'll see what the staff does to compensate for that.
All right, about 3.5 minutes left here. Really quick, before we get to the player of the game, what else, really quick, do you see that needs improving before Notre Dame?
I think we touched on a lot of stuff. I mean, definitely receivers getting open and maybe a little bit better offensive line play. But, yeah, I don't know much more than that. Definitely, probably another thing is Geiger's got to start making some field goals. You know, when we're in the 35-yard range, you got to make that. I think that needs improvement,
mm-hmm.
too.
Yeah, the that field goal that he missed, 42, 43 yards away, right hash mark, except it was dry. He can make it in the driving rain in Columbus, but he can't do it in Spartan Stadium when it's completely dry. That kind of threw me off, but you know what? I'll trade a missed field goal against Furman in a game like that as opposed to a missed field goal against Ohio State for the Big Ten East.
Right.
So,
for sure.
Let's get to your player of the game. Who impressed you the most? Who was your who was the best player for the green and white on Friday?
It probably got to be LJ Scott. You know, he ran a heck of a game, and he's definitely, as many expected, he's shown himself to be the best running back in the group of three. And you know, that 100-yard performance, given what the things he faced, you know, like you said, he was getting hit behind the line of scrimmage and stuff. He still was, you know, was able to get that 100 yards. I thought LJ Scott was very impressive.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with Jake Hartbarger. I mean, it sounds bad, but I mean, at what point do you just expect the domination over Furman? And I honestly thought nobody played better. We said O'Connor had a few bad throws. LJ Scott, 5 yards a carry. I mean, it's not bad, but it's not great given the competition he played. Hartbarger had 3 punts, all of them inside the 10-yard. All of them inside the 10-yard line. One of them going for 58 yards. I thought given his leg and his consistency issues last season, maybe we would not be able to flip the field, which ultimately this is going to end up like 2013, 2012 in some ways. The ability to flip the field is going to be very important for this team if they want to thrive on this defense. Ultimately, they do need to change things in regard to the short passes and stepping up in those situations like we've beat to death over the last 7 minutes or so. But Hartbarger's ability to flip the field is going to be huge, and I thought he you saw a lot of punters over the weekend pay tribute to Sam Fultz and Mike Sadler. I thought he did it. I thought he did it with his leg, the way Sadler used to pin guys inside the 10. I thought he did an excellent job with that. But that does it for us today. Be sure to tune in next time. For Mike Sterner, I'm Tyler Hayward. This was the iSports MSU Red Cedar Report.